What is recovery? What is not recovery? Welcome to the Therapy Brothers podcast.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Tyler.
We're brothers.
We're therapists.
And we know recovery.
Bring your stories, your questions, your successes with real recovery.
Hey, Tyler, you ready to have some hard conversations?
Let's do it.
Let the Therapy Brothers podcast begin.
Brandon, you've gone and done it, man.
Living my best life.
If you guys aren't watching this on YouTube, Brandon finally, after years, like probably since 1997, he went back to his favorite hairstyle ever, and he's actually sporting the mullet.
You got to see it to believe it. So go over, subscribe on YouTube to the Therapy Bros.
I love it. Actually, with those flowing locks of yours, you make a really nice mullet.
Oh, yeah. It's like I said, I'm baseball dad now. You got the baseball haircut. Why are you laughing?
I love it, man. I love it. I just have images, memories of our childhood where you grew your hair out for like almost a whole school year just so that you could have a party to shave it into a mullet.
Well, that was back when mullets were like funny, and now they're like in style.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Hey, the mullet has always been a timeless haircut.
Business in front, party in back, man.
That's right. Well, we should get to business. Before we get into the topic today, if you'd like to become a caller on the show, therapybros.com, therapybros.com, go hit the button to ask a question and it'll allow you to sign up. So if you have any questions or you'd love to come on and talk with us, we'd love to have you. That's the way to do it.
If you've been wavering to come on, now's a great time to come on. So head over there, sign up. We'd love to have you. All right, Tyler, you ready to dive in?
Yeah, let's get into this a little bit.
Actually, this topic is coming a little bit from, I don't know if I'd call it frustration, but almost my own frustration after talking to clients for over a decade, after talking to podcast guests for hours on end, over and over again. And what's interesting is how people can be, working a recovery, I put in quotation marks, for years, and then not yield the results that they're looking for, and get stuck in the same patterns and the same traps and the same things that they've always been stuck in. In fact, sometimes the shame is exacerbated after years of trying to work recovery. And people are shooting at the wrong target so often. I just wanted to have a conversation with you about what are those wrong targets and what is the right target? What is actual recovery? Recovery shouldn't be this ambiguous thing that's out in the cosmos. It should be like an actual real thing. And I just wanted to clarify that. So with that, Tyler, I'm sure you've seen it for years too. You've kind of felt that frustration of people spinning their wheels, not getting better, not getting the results they're looking for.
I think, Brandon, this is a good topic because I've felt the same things as you. And I have in many occasions and many times actually been wrestling with how to actually articulate what real recovery is versus all of these other versions of recovery that might be out there. Some of all these versions of recovery we're going to talk about today actually have validity towards a wholehearted recovery. And so it's not like you throw them out, but they can't be the sole focus. And I think that's something that we're maybe going to get into a little bit, is the target we're looking towards might include some of the things that you're actually doing. But if you're doing those things as the final target, oftentimes that's not enough to have a wholehearted recovery.
Yeah, a lot of it depends on intention. What's the energy behind why you do what you do? And that makes all of the difference. And when you look at the energy behind it, you shift that energy, it changes the outcomes long term. So maybe we should break down just some of the the targets that we see that don't work.
I think when, as we do this, Brannon, it's important that you and I acknowledge that when we talk about these things, we're not like shaming anybody. We're actually saying, this is where you can get really frustrated because you're putting in so much effort, maybe even with a good heart, but it doesn't seem to be yielding the right results.
Right. Right. So if we can back up just a little bit, and just if I can illustrate what I see a lot, which is somebody has a behavior and they're doing this behavior usually in secrecy. And sometimes that behavior has gotten more intense and more extreme over time. Sometimes it hasn't. It's just kind of stayed steady. But it's a secret they have. It's a thing they do and a secret that they have. And it's sexual in nature. And so there's a lot of shame about it, and there's just a lot of guilt and a lot of just torment and self-rejection going on. And either they finally have had enough and they're motivated on their own to say, I'm done with this, or they get caught and the consequences pile up in their life. And they say, uh-oh, like, I better do something about this. Whether it's external motivation or internal motivation, they get to a point in life where it's like, ugh, pain. I don't like pain. Something needs to shift. So where they go next is, what I need to do is get rid of this behavior in order to be happy, in order to not have these consequences. And so they attribute the issue to the behavior that they've been doing. And so they you know, work hard to try to get as sober as they can get, to try to control their behaviors. And there's even a sense of self-rejection in there of, I got to force myself to not do these things. I got to force myself to not be who I am, to shift these things. And to try to control my behaviors, because if I can control my behaviors, then I'll get better. I'll rebuild trust in my relationship, or I'll get the consequences that I want. So this is kind of what we see all the time. And the issue with it is, well, Tyler, do you want to speak to that? Can you see it?
Yeah. Well, yeah. So for the first, what you're saying, when you look at what you just said, it makes sense why we go that way, because the thing that bears its ugly head, so to speak, is the behavior itself, right? That's the fruit of the plant that you can see. And so, of course, all of us are focused on the thing that you can see. The thing that's causing the problem, so to speak, is, I do this thing and it then ruins my life, or it ruins my marriage, or it ruins my self-confidence, or so this thing does need to stop. But where we go wrong is that we think that the behavior itself and just the cessation of the behavior will actually produce the fruit that we're looking for, when in reality, what we're doing, if we only address the behavior, is we are addressing the coping mechanism that is dealing with the underlying pain that we've been trying to deal with all along. And so, yeah. So we're going to be leaving, in a certain sense, we're going to be leaving parts of ourselves, important parts of ourselves behind, in fact, necessary parts of ourselves behind, if we're only focusing on stopping the behavior. And then when the focus turns into only stopping the behavior, it too often lends itself to the things that actually feed more shame, things like compulsion and control and rigidity. And all of those things actually fuel more shame. Shame loves those things. Shame doesn't like structure, but it loves compulsion and rigidity.
Yeah. So what you just said there at the end, I think, is important to really highlight, is when you go in with the wrong intention of just trying to force yourself to stop this behavior, then you are not only are you not really getting better, you're actually getting worse. Because your self-rejection is the problem here. And so if you go into this using more self-rejection to stop this behavior, you're learning how to reject even more. Which then, and you and I...
is the perpetuation.
Yeah. And Tyler, you and I know this from experience, but that perpetuates the behavior. Like it actually creates more compulsive acting out as a result. And it leads to this like vicious cycle that goes on and on and on. So we see a couple of things, Tyler. I want to stop this behavior. So recovery means stopping the behavior. The other thing that we see a lot of is I don't want my spouse to be mad at me. And what I need to do is get them to think that I'm a good person and get them to like me. And then I'll be in recovery. That like they determine, and my marriage determines whether I'm in recovery or not. Because if she's good, I'm good, right? If a happy wife, happy life, like if that's okay, then everything's okay. And again, this perpetuates the problem too. And why, Tyler?
Because it lends you to focusing on managing and manipulating her feelings as the success bar, rather than looking at yourself and systematically working towards a place of congruency and self-acceptance. In some ways, you would rather try to keep her happy than to be honest with yourself.
Yeah, you're operating from a place of fear still, correct?
Right.
Like if you're Mr. Nice Guy, codependent, trying to get your spouse to like you, that's all that matters, then you're still resonating in more fear. And so you're not getting better on an individual level, and you're not making your relationship any better. You're making it worse.
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly. So in an effort to try to make, and that's why it's so exasperating, is because you think you're trying to make it better when in reality, it's not helping it.
Yep.
Because it's not based in that place of like authenticity and honesty with the process that you're engaged in.
Right. Yeah, so sobriety focused, relationship focused, recovery, trying to get those kind of exterior outcomes, I'll say. Any others you can think of?
Yeah, this is going to be a weird one, but recovery focused recovery. Like tracking how many meetings you go to and how many assignments you did, and you know, like what you're doing is you're basically putting the program of recovery as the recovery, and you're actually missing the real reason the program is in place.
Yeah. Yep.
So if I go to 7 meetings a day, if I do my 90 and 90, and then I'm like, I'm killing it, and I did this and I did that and I did that, but it's like, but my heart hasn't changed.
Your
I have a
checklist in it.
Yeah. That one takes a ton of effort. And it never yields the deeper, richer, like beauty of what real recovery is.
Well, and you know why? Because if you're checklisting it and you get all the systems in place and do all that stuff and checklist away, what you're not doing is taking full ownership and accountability for your recovery, of what works for you and who you are. And you're just trying to show somebody how awesome you are, whether it's yourself or someone else, and you're just going through the motions. And it, you know, recovery. Well, before I move on to this, Tyler, any others you can think of
in terms of like targets that look like recovery but that aren't?
Yeah, I mean, I have one that we see once in a while, and it really has to do with church and kind of religious structures. But you know, when you're working with a leader and you're trying to get sober enough, it comes back to the sobriety thing. Sober enough so I can get to a certain point, so then I can go on a mission or go to the temple or do this with church or whatever it is. There's a, you know, I've seen people put time frames on things like, well, I just got to go 6 months and then I'm good enough. That it doesn't work. That's not recovery. Okay. That's a white knuckle, of the behavior. It's behavior focused. It's a white knuckle. It's not addressing the actual issue.
Right. Yeah, Brandon. That's another one, and it kind of ties into the white knuckle and the sobriety. As and this, you said this is an important part, and I think this is something we'll have to cover more in this episode. Is as a result of then being good enough, something some sort of performative to be good enough.
I made it 3 months. I made it 6 months. I did these things, so then I'm good, right? I'm good, right? I hit the goal, and oftentimes what happens right after hitting those goals is a crash and burn. It's just back to the all the old stuff because nothing has really changed.
Yeah, that's right. Because the bones aren't being put in place to have a full, wholehearted recovery.
Yep. All right, so let's talk wholehearted recovery and actually give some definition as to what this is and talk about, like, really flesh this out. What is actual recovery and what is the target we should be aiming at here? If the acting out behaviors are the fruits, like you say, are the results of a underlying issue, then what actually needs to be healed? And we talk about shame, like it feeds the shame. What does that mean? And how does shame play into recovery or not recovery?
Right. So if we were to use the analogy of the plant for a second, Brandon, if the fruit of the plant is that outcome of the behavior of acting out, then you'd have the structure of the plant, which would be, you know, your belief system, the things that you build your life upon that then lead to those outcomes. And then underneath that, you have the roots of the plant, which is where those beliefs were formed from life experiences, from trauma, from your life, from the way you see the world, from the way you've been socialized, the way you learn to see yourself, all of those things. So a wholehearted recovery has to include attention to all parts of the plant.
Yeah. So you just did from top down. Let me try from bottom up. Is we have certain things happen to us in our life, and we have certain systems put in place from the day we're born. Trauma comes in, we have experiences, and we start to interpret the world a certain way, and we start to interpret ourselves and view ourselves a certain way. And we put a lens on of the way that we view this world. And so the roots of this plant is the trauma, the trunk and the branches are the shame, and the system saying you're bad, you're broken, you're not enough, you better hide, your sexuality is disgusting and you're perverted. And so all of those beliefs, that system is there. That's the lens that we put on, which leads to secrecy, which leads to compulsion, which leads to acting out behaviors, which fuels and feeds the very belief systems that were already there, right? So the reason, Tyler, I think the reason you brought up top down first is because that's the way that we do our work. Somebody comes in and they're like, oh, I'm acting out, I compulsive behaviors. And we gotta say, hey, like, yeah, we see that, but let's start to dig down and actually get to the core and the roots of what's actually going on here.
That's right. And that's where it gets scary, because down at the roots is where we have to face the shadows. We have to face the shadows of our life that we spent most of our lives in our egos trying to avoid. The things that tell us we're not enough, the things that have left us feeling compromised, even the drives inside of us, you know, like, you know, the more you and I get into this, we're not in the business of killing sexual drives. We're in the business of harnessing them. And people are afraid of acknowledging that they have that part of them in there that could be dangerous. And yet it's so valuable when it's treated with the right kinds of, you know, respect and discipline. And learning to understand and incorporate all of that is vital to a wholehearted long-term recovery. I get this image in my mind, Brandon, and maybe I'll flesh this out in a different episode too. But like for me personally, I wake up every day and I feel like I have this in front of me every day, maybe multiple times a day, where I'm standing on my level ground when I wake up. And if I look up, I can see up ahead of me, there's a mountain that I get to climb. And that mountain, at the top of the mountain, I can see I am. When I look up and I know who I am and I realize that God loves me no matter what I am, and he wants me to be a force for good. He wants me to be a teacher. He wants me to be a guide. He wants me to take risks. He wants me to, you know, go on adventures. He wants me to fight healthy battles. He wants me to like step into the life that he designed me for. I have the chance and the choice to go up that path and up that road and up that mountain every single day a little bit further. But along the way, there are also divergences in that path that lead you down. They lead you back down into the old way of being. They lead you back down into maybe it's a thought that comes up of shame, of why am I not enough? Or maybe it's a sexual trigger that comes up, or maybe it's something that somebody says to you, or maybe it's that you're stressed out and tired, or maybe there's just a physiological trigger that happens. And if you entertain that, and then you criticize yourself, and then you live in the shame of it, then you obsess about it, then you become compulsive over it, then you end up acting it out. What you do is you get a chance to lead yourself either further up the mountain towards a life that's worth living every day, or we continue to keep ourselves trapped. And that's where we end up in what I would consider our own personal hell, where we're the ones perpetuating the hell that we're living in and don't even realize that we're doing it.
It's as you're talking about this, Tyler, it's, you know, to me, it's, here's my favorite word. It's paradoxical in that if I'm always operating from, I got to get to the top of that mountain, then I'm always in a deficiency mode. I'm not enough. I got to work harder. I got to do better. Every time I stumble and fall, it's like, man, I'm back in hell. Here I am again. I can't get out of it. And you and I both know, like, you know, you focus on the process and you embrace the journey of it every day. And when you stumble and fall, if you can learn and grow from that stumble and fall, then you're in recovery, not standing on top of that mountain that you're talking about.
Yeah. In fact, I would add to my analogy just a little bit, Brandon, that keeping the eyes on the target does not mean you're shaming yourself for not being there. It's you step where you look. And if you're looking up and you know where you want to be going, then at the same time, this is the paradox, I can take today's steps. And what you're saying, Brandon, is that wholehearted recovery fully embraces the growth mindset, that I will continue to learn and grow. I will never actually reach the top of the mountain, like, because
I'm forever
growing. But if I keep that vision and I start to treat myself like I'm capable of climbing the mountain, then when I do stumble, I can also develop the skill set that allows me to. So in essence, if we're using the analogy, if I take the wrong path and I start to go down, I can develop a set of skills and tools and ways of seeing the world and thinking to reorient myself and put myself, kind of bushwhack my way back to the true path. And the further down the trail I go, the more suffering I will incur, but eventually I can still use all of the tools and skills that I'm self-compassion, mindfulness and awareness, you know, all of the things that you learn in recovery, even the sobriety tools are part of that. But it's all directed back towards the congruency of the process of being growth-minded toward the life that I was designed for.
But Tyler, the way, like, that's wonderful. But to actually navigate life that way sounds wonderful. But if I'm a person steeped in shame, and you tell me that that's how I should navigate life, how am I going to respond?
Like, oh, I'm failing at that. I suck.
Yeah, more failure, right? And because you're absolutely right. This is the like ongoing person that's in recovery. This is how life looks to them. But at the core of it is, you brought this up earlier, and I want to bring up a couple things that you brought up. At the core of it is this trauma, and this trauma has said that you're not enough. And then you know that I'm not enough. I'm broken. I'm you know, not lovable, whatever it is, whatever the shame says. You could go to Tyler, you could come to me for therapy, and I could say, you are enough. You're wonderful. You're great. But in order for you to actually know that you are, you have to experience it. You have to, because you learned it from an experience in the first place, to undo that trauma and to change those faulty core beliefs, you have to experience something different, which means that it's going to require a bit of faith and a bit of courage in order to put yourself out there to experience something new. It's going to require acting opposite to what your shame is telling you to do in order to experience something different. And when you have those experiences, then all of a sudden your view changes, your perception of the world shifts completely. And when your perception of the world shifts completely, you have a different operating system. You can get on that path that Tyler's talking about, and you can sustain it long term. Right?
So, Tyler. So Brandon, part of what you're saying, yes, part of what you're saying that's necessary for a wholehearted recovery is emotionally corrective experiences best served in the places where your darkest fears lie. So, yep. So for instance, what I'm hearing you say is, if I, as a young man, I learn that I can get a lot of people to accept me and love me by performing really well, and if I hide all of my mistakes, then they never see my mistakes and I don't get rejected. That's a core belief of mine mm-hmm. that then, as I grow into adulthood, actually robs me of connections with other people, because I can't ever be perfect. I'm never going to like myself because I'll never hit the target that I set for myself. And then when I do stumble, people are going to judge me, and then it'll reinforce my shame. And if that's yes. the belief system I've been living off of, what you're saying, and this is scary, what you're saying is that what I need to do is find a place where I can go and show my imperfections and have somebody say, dude, I love you.
Yeah.
Wow, man. Thanks for
sharing. That's exactly it. So, and it's,
instead
it's
of like,
well, it's unique to the type of shame. So like, let's take you and I, for example, Tyler. Growing up, you were the hero, you were the performer, you were trying to show mom
golden
and dad
child.
You were the best golden child. I was the lost child. I was didn't want to be seen for a while. I tried to play small in order to not be seen. So you can see us, we're different. What you need to experience is to be fallen. You need to fail in front of somebody who is important. You need to experience that I'm okay even if I do fail that way. What I need to experience is I gotta, like, and this was excruciating for me for a while, I gotta put myself out there. I gotta, like, jump in the arena and have someone laugh in my face and think that you're not okay. But I have to put myself out there because I got so good at hiding. You can see the different experiences that we both need. So it's like Tyler froze on me. So maybe he'll be back here. But luckily, this is a topic that I can go on about for a minute here. We miss that experiencing, Tyler says, an emotionally corrective experience. I believe it's an emotional and spiritual corrective experience. And our systems get so good at protecting us from having those gut-wrenching, vulnerable experiences that we stay stuck in the perpetual cycles of the shame again and again and again. Our systems are set up to help us avoid the very things that we need. And what's beautiful is when you get to know yourself and you realize, look, I can step into these most uncomfortable situations and I can gain strength from this, then I'll know myself different. So welcome back, Tyler. I told him you froze up so I was just saying, Tyler, how we get, like, we don't want to do these vulnerable things that I'm talking about, and then we get caught in protection mode of trying hard not to be in the position of, like, for example, you being seen as a failure, or, you know, or me being seen at all. And so we work really hard to not do that. And that's actually the exact thing that we need. The cave you fear to enter holds the treasure you seek. There's a reason I bring that up all the time, because it does. Absolutely. Are you with me, Tyler?
I'm 100% exactly where you're going, Brandon. I love the fact that we could be two brothers from the same family and have actually the need for the same principle, but a different actual like logistical in order to get to those things you're talking about. Where as you're talking about it, it's sitting on my heart. Like I spent my whole life looking good in front of people. I still do that.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, you still have that every day. You have that battle to fight. Yeah.
Every day. And I have to figure out how to continually put myself into places where, whether that's with God or with other people, I have to bring my humanness back and say, this is me, and let myself receive love and affection regardless of perfection. And in your case, it's the opposite, Brandon, where you needed to learn to step out and actually accept yourself being seen a little bit more and put yourself out there. And, you know, and as you do that, you have that emotionally corrective experience. And when that starts to take place, Brandon, that's why I think you're going there with this, is then you start to actually see that maybe there is a growth-minded way of seeing your life and your world. Like maybe you don't have to live with the same beliefs that you've always just naturally accepted because they've just always been there.
You start to actually get to know yourself. You start to actually see yourself, not what the trauma told you, not what the shame told you. It's like, oh, I'm pretty cool. I'm unique. I'm beautiful. I'm awesome. And when you know that within yourself, when you know that between you and God, then you don't have reasons to numb your life out. And you don't have reasons to try to get your self-worth from your partner, because you've gotten to know yourself. And instead of living in this state of shame, you're now in a place of love and appreciation and gratitude for who you are. And it's not arrogance, but it's that gratitude piece of who you are. And so you can show up confident, you can show up steady, you can show up strong, you can show up honest, because you don't have anything to hide. And when you start to show up that way, what do you know? You can attach in a healthy way to others and create intimacy and connection and beauty all around you. And that's, you're not perfect. You're going to stumble. You're going to fall. Like Tyler said, he's battling the battles every day still with his shame. I am too. But you, there's a different energy and feeling around a person that loves themselves versus a person that's constantly rejecting themselves. That's
person, a person who's come to that's right, Brandon. I think you just nailed a really great definition of recovery and everything you just said there. That all of those things you described, self-confidence, accountability, humility, possibility, commitment, effort, growth, peace, joy, the pursuit of those things is actually what real recovery is. And it comes through the actual integration and understanding of the places where our darkest shadows lie.
Yep.
And so that's where the courage comes in, is that we have to go and confront those places in order to rewrite the story, in order to feel it differently, to understand it differently. And when we do, Brandon, you know this, you've been around people who do this. We love this. Like, we have, both you and I, Brandon, both, we have a community of people that are in recovery that are fairly close to us, just past clients or whatever else. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying when I say this, that you feel their recovery.
Yep.
You feel it. You know what it's like? You, listeners, think about the most wholehearted person that you know, and whether they're in formal recovery or not, they're living the principles of recovery. They're growth-minded. They're willing to learn. They're willing to act with courage. They're willing to experience failure. They're willing to take risks. They're willing to, you know, step into good causes. And they can give their presence because they know who they are.
Yeah.
That's what allows them to offer their presence. That's where the connection actually comes from.
Right. The you know, you are recovering something. You're recovering yourself. and who you are, and an understanding of self on a soul level, emotional, spiritual level of this is who I am. You're recovering the I am. And when you do recover that, then all of the other things start to fall into place. If you focus on all of the other things and never focused on recovering the I am, then you're going to get further away from knowing who you actually are, right?
That's the crossroads that I was talking about earlier, Brandon. To me, if you boil it all down, the pathway that leads up the mountain is the pathway towards systematically uncovering and accepting the truth of I am. And the pathway that leads me down is the pathway into that place of I'm not. Whatever that not is. And we are the ones, and this is what's amazing, we are the ones who have the chance to make those choices on a regular basis, daily basis, developing those habits and leaning into that process. We're never going to be perfect at it.
Right.
We'll just have to bushwhack once in a while to get back to the true path. But once you're on the true path and once you've tasted of it, Brandon, and this is what I think you've been trying to get at all the time, is once there's been an emotional taste of what that real recovery can look and feel like, then it's easier to come back to it and recommit to it and live it over and over again.
Yep. And Tyler, if I can get a little out there, I believe that if you know, God looketh on the heart, and if your heart is set to heal yourself and to know yourself, you will get answers. And when we, you know, it seems weird when we talk about things like white stones and new names and being born again or whatever we want to call it. But there's moments along the path where you are endowed with the love of knowing who you really truly are. And when you get those things, it does solidify some things in your heart. And the shame and Satan and the fear doesn't dominate anymore. It doesn't have the power that it used to have. But in order to have those things happen, you have to have the courage and the faith to go there, to go far enough in order to get those endowments, I would say, from God. Those blessings that say, hey, I'm here, I see you, I know you. And you're important. So, do I sound crazy?
I love that, Brandon. No, you don't sound crazy at all. Could I let you mock me and could I quote a poem really quickly?
Oh, I was trying to say stuff to get you to the point of a poem. This is perfect. No, seriously though, I'd love a poem.
It's just hitting me this way, and I want, I'll just add a couple of thoughts afterwards to what you were saying. You've heard this one before. And at the crossroads, he stood at the crossroads all alone, the sunlight in his face. He had no fear for the path unknown. He was set for a manly race. The road stretched east, the road stretched west. There was no one to tell him which road was best. So he took the road that led him down, and he lost the race in the victor's crown. He fell at last in an ugly snare because no one stood at the crossroads there. Another boy on another day at the self-same crossroads stood. He paused a moment to choose the way that would lead to the greater good. And the road stretched east and the road stretched west. And one was there to show him the best. So he turned right and went on, and he won the race in the victor's crown. He walks today the highway fair because one stood at the crossroads there. And I think, Brandon, that's what we're getting at today, is the experience with God at the crossroads. That's the key. Mm-hmm. We have to put ourselves into the reality of wrestling with a higher power at the crossroads so that we can learn the better way. Because most of us have been raised by flawed human beings in a fallen world that have given us beliefs that we didn't even know we had. And we took the road and let us down and maybe felt like we'd lost the race in the victor's crown. But the truth is there is one that stands at the crossroads. And when we come to understand our value in a higher power's eyes, there is direction that leads us to the better path. And that better path leads to life and joy and vibrance and color and possibility. And that is what recovery is.
Yep, that's recovery. And to go along with this poem, Your higher power is always at the crossroads. It's whether you have the eyes to see and to feel that. And if you open your eyes up to that and you stop pushing away and stop self-rejecting and believing the shame, you'll see it. And then you'll know the pathway to go. And that's recovery. And so when people come on and they, you know, they focus on all the wrong things, yeah, that's okay. That's where they're at. But if you're listening to this episode and you're thinking, maybe I've been missing it, you know, to let the cat out of the bag just a little bit, Tyler and I have been working on a program that's all about healing these core wounds and shifting your belief systems. And it's not a sexual addiction recovery program, but it's exactly what you need for sexual addiction recovery. Right, Tyler?
It's a recovery program, but it's more about a wholehearted life and recovery from healing and from shame and trauma.
Yeah, the real work.
The real work.
Yep. Tyler, thank you for the poem. Appreciate it.
You're welcome, Brent. I know you're always itching for those.
Yeah, no, that's good. You guys, if this was helpful, then please share it. This might be one that you go back and listen to again. Tyler and I kind of fly through some of these bigger principles, and you can break them down, digest them, and figure out what we're actually saying. That's the beauty of podcasting. You can go back and listen again. So
thank you guys for being with us. And until next time, keep on keeping on.